You can do more than make a year-end gift. You can become a FaithFi partner. Hi, I'm Rob West. When you give to FaithFi, you're not just supporting a radio program. You're helping equip millions of families to live as faithful stewards through our app, studies, devotionals, and the Faith and Finance radio program. When you give a one-time gift of $400 or more, or become a monthly partner at $35, you'll receive exclusive resources like our Faithful Steward magazine, devotionals, and premium tools in the FaithFi app. Right now, thanks to generous donors, every donation made before December 31st will be matched dollar for dollar. That means your gift goes twice as far to help families manage God's money God's way and treasure what truly lasts. But the match ends soon, so don't wait. Visit faithfi.com/give today. Now, on to the podcast.
My taxes help to support the public institutions which I have mentioned, and they cost enough. Those who are badly off must go there.
Many can't go there, and many would rather die.
If they would rather die, perhaps they had better do so, and decrease the surplus population.
Surely you don't mean that, sir.
With all my heart.
Merry Christmas. I'm Rob West. That was Ebenezer Scrooge in Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol. There's a message hidden in that exchange, and Jerry Boyer will let us in on the secret today. Then it's on to your calls at 800-525-7000. This is Faith and Finance, biblical wisdom for your financial journey. Well, Jerry Boyer is our resident economist here at FaithFi and the president of Boyer Research. He's also the author of The Maker and the Takers, What Jesus Really Said About Social Justice and Economics. Jerry, great to have you back.
Always a pleasure. Was that George C. Scott? Was that the George C. Scott version that you just played?
It sure was. Absolutely.
That's a good one.
It sure was. Well, I'm looking forward to this. A little different, Jerry. We're doing a movie review, and most of us have heard or read that exchange between Scrooge and the alms collectors many times. So I'm looking forward to hearing your insights. Jerry, what have we been missing?
Well, what we've been missing is the extreme importance of that phrase surplus population. Because we don't happen to be in the mindset of the early mid 1800s. So when we have conversations in our time, if we hear someone say zero population growth, we know what that means. Yeah. If we hear people talking about reproductive rights, we know what that means. But if we hear someone talk about surplus population, we don't know what that means. But they did. And it's not really very subtle at all. There was a very active debate that had started, I don't know, about 40 years before Dickens wrote the book, A Christmas Carol, by the Reverend economist Thomas Malthus. So I guess he's a Christian economist, but I don't think he was a very good one. Because Malthus believed that because of the biblical commentary about the ground being cursed, that meant that there were too many people in the world. That as we reproduced and created and brought into being, God creates us, but as we conceive and bring into the world more people, that the population grows faster than the food supply and the supply of goods and services. So that's called Malthusianism, big word for this Malthus. He wrote a book called An Essay on Population that was very influential. And basically, the idea was we need to stop the poor, especially, from having so many babies. They're having too many children because they're producing what? Surplus population. There is a population surplus, too many people, not enough food. So when Dickens put that language in the mouth of Ebenezer Scrooge, he's making a very important point. Scrooge is now a stand-in for a certain philosophy, the philosophy of Thomas Malthus, the philosophy that now we would call zero population growth.
Yeah, and not everyone agreed with Malthus, of course. So who opposed his theories?
Jean-Baptiste Say, who was one of the founders of classical and supply-side economics, but I think G.K. Chesterton was another, the Christian journalist. But I think his most important opponent was Charles Dickens. Because once you understand that Dickens is writing about this, we now understand that The Christmas Carol was, in fact, a story written against Malthus. Because by the end, Scrooge changes his mind. Scrooge is wrong, okay? So if you put a philosophy in the mouth of your villain, you're basically saying you disagree with that philosophy. And the story really is the unfolding of why, first of all, why Scrooge got wrong in the first place. It has to do with his own childhood trauma of hunger and cold. When he goes back in time with the ghost of Christmas past, and these aren't ghosts, these are angels, right? That's, I think, obvious to most Christian readers. When he goes back in time, Dickens says that the school where he lived felt or smelt of not enough to eat and too much cold and too much darkness. So he was poor when he was young. By the way, an interesting kind of economic history side note here. If you treat Scrooge like a real historical character, he grew up before the free, he was a child before the free market revolution, when things really were dire. And then when he's an adult, you have a free market revolution and things really are abundant.
Fascinating. Jerry Boyer here today. Much more on A Christmas Carol just around the corner. Stick around.
Imagine having biblical financial wisdom delivered to your inbox every week, helping you integrate your faith and financial decisions for the glory of God. At faithfi.com, you can join a community of over 70,000 people who are already receiving our weekly wisdom email, filled with articles, videos, podcasts, and exclusive offers on resources that will deepen your understanding of biblical stewardship. Start your journey today by creating your FaithFi account at faithfi.com. Just click sign up.
Are you looking to maximize your charitable impact this season? The National Christian Foundation has a smart solution. It's called a giving fund, and it helps you give more strategically, grow your balance tax-free, and amplify your charitable impact. If you want a donor-advised fund that aligns with your values, open a giving fund today and start making a bigger difference for the causes you love. Learn how at faithfi.com/NCF. Delighted to have you with us today here on Faith and Finance. With me today, Jerry Boyer, my good friend, our resident economist and president of Boyer Research. We're talking about Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol, perhaps from a vantage point you haven't considered previously. Jerry, just before the break, you were talking about Thomas Malthus and how he was really represented in the character of Scrooge, who was obviously the villain character that comes full circle at the end. But what else can we take away from this character that gives us some insight into Malthus and what he was advocating at the time?
Well, I think one of the things that's really interesting is the Ghost of Christmas Present. When Scrooge first sees him, Christmas Present says, "Have you never met my like behind or any of my brothers before or any of my brothers?" And Scrooge says, "How many brothers have you had?" "Well, more than 1,800. In other words, there have been more than 1,800 Christmases. And what's Scrooge's reaction? "What a large family to provide for." See, there's that scarcity mindset.
Yes.
When, I mean, a lot of people think having a lot of brothers and sisters is a good thing. I do. My kids do.
Sure.
They like having brothers and sisters. But we believe God is abundant and generous. But Scrooge didn't, if he believed in him at all. And when Scrooge says that, "What a large family to provide for," Christmas Present rises in anger. He disapproves of Scrooge's Malthusian ideas. Later on, when they go to see Tiny Tim, Scrooge, you know, talks about Tiny Tim and how he cares for them, and the ghost kind of throws it back in his face. "You called him the surplus population. You know, forgo that cant, man." And then he makes an analogy that Scrooge is like a bug on a leaf looking down at the bugs in the dirt, saying that there are too many. To him, we're all kind of bugs, but, you know, Scrooge is a little richer than Tim, so he thinks there's too many people. And then the ghost kind of raises the question, maybe you're the surplus population. Maybe you're the one that doesn't deserve to live. So he's pretty tough on Scrooge, but in the end, it works well. And then later, the Ghost of Christmas Present takes him to the marketplace, and there's all this food. And he emphasizes the food from different parts of the world, oranges and things like that, which you can't grow in Britain. So the international trade and the economic takeoff that you and I have talked about in the presentation where that I do on 2000 years of economic history, where you see the bubbles rising and falling. When you see the United Kingdom bubble rising, it's back down low in Malthusian equilibrium when Scrooge is a baby, and it's kind of popping out during Scrooge's lifetime. The great takeoff is actually occurring. Obviously, he's a fictional character, but you can kind of treat him where he was. And that great takeoff is just taking place during his lifetime. Malthus was wrong at exactly the worst time. He makes his predictions before the greatest increase in human flourishing ever known to mankind.
Mm, wow. Well, now, of course, these Malthusian ideas haven't gone away, Jerry. So who's advocating them in modern times?
Planned Parenthood is the Malthusian philosophy in industrial profitized form, even though technically it's a nonprofit. The abortion revolution is largely a result of a belief that there's surplus population. We go back to Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood. Too many of the wrong people, the swarthy people, the people of color, the poor people. So it's interesting that these people who believe that there are too many people, it's never their kind of people that there are too many of. Ivy League professors who think there are too many people don't think, well, there's too many of my folks. You know, they think there's too many of other kind of folks, usually immigrants, usually people who are working class. Usually people, I mean, this is why the Scopes trial takes place in the South. Southerners are thought of as too many people because they're thought of as backwards. Black people, Italian people, Jewish people, you know, outsiders, they're the surplus population. And whether it's the contraceptive revolution or whether especially I'm going to focus on to the degree that it's grounded in a zero population growth ideology, that it's bad to have babies. And that shows up in the abortion industry. That shows up in a lot of like the Davos world and the United Nations sustainability. It shows up in a lot of corporate engagement that in order to be sustainable, we have to have fewer people. History shows in order to be sustainable, we have to have more people. The most sustainable thing that we can do economically is to fulfill God's commandment to fill the earth and subdue it.
Yes.
There are no surplus people. And I think it's interesting. I think this story is called A Christmas Carol because Jesus, Yeshua of Nazareth, would very easily have been classified as surplus population in a Malthusian worldview.
Mm. Now, the poor in workhouses in England weren't fictional, of course. So how did the economic system there and elsewhere get so confused?
Well, I by the way, note that they're government entities. So Scrooge is in some ways a welfare state person. In other words, men are going door to door saying, we want to do private charity. And he doesn't want to do private charity.
Yeah.
He wants to do it through taxes where it's impersonal. The workhouses and the prisons, they, in essence, they would keep people alive, but it would be a terrible existence. So the idea is to punish them for being poor. And that obviously is not the solution. So if you want to be the opposite of Scrooge, you're going to be pro-baby and you're going to be pro-private charity. You're going to be pro-generosity. And by the end, that's exactly what Scrooge is. He's pro-generosity. By the way, another little side story. When he visits his nephew Fred, you know, when Fred visits him, Fred implies that Scrooge was upset because Fred married. Why did you marry? Scrooge didn't want his nephew to marry because of surplus population. You marry and you have children. See, it comes up again and again and again. Scrooge's whole existence was there's too many people. God, if he exists at all, is stingy. By the end, though, what is he? He's generous, and he's especially generous to children. By the way, I don't know if people know this, but Dickens wrote a novel version of the Gospels. He read the Gospels and then wrote a novel. I think it's called The Life of Our Lord, and it has similar themes. So Dickens was thinking a lot about Jesus, wrote a novel about him, and also about he was one of those people who might have been considered the forgotten class, but he treated everyone with love and dignity, which made Jesus unusual. That's something Dickens really focuses on the novel.
Wow. Yeah, well said. Jerry, we're getting short on time. So when folks watch A Christmas Carol this season and perhaps look at it through this new lens, this filter that you've just shared, what would you hope, above all else, they take away from the story?
That God is generous, not stingy, that Scrooge is damaged because he grew up in poverty. It's real. There's trauma. And so we should be patient with him and help move him away, but that we should help move our entire Scrooge ruling class philosophy away from Scrooge at the beginning towards Scrooge at the end, where everybody's welcome. We aren't bugs in the dust. We produce, and we produce more than we consume. And over time, that has given us miraculous prosperity and flourishing, which Dickens was just seeing the beginning of. So I think we should watch it with gratitude and also understanding that there's real philosophy going on here and theology going on here. It's not just a fun story. And then we should bring Dickens' philosophy into our own lives. The child in the womb who's unwanted is the Tiny Tim of our generation.
Wow, well said. What an opportunity to share this with our kids, too, as we watch this and help them interpret what they're seeing. Jerry, always thankful for you, my friend. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you.
Folks, as we reflect on Dickens' reminder about generosity, it naturally brings to mind why FaithFi exists, to help families live as faithful stewards of all God provides. If this ministry has been an encouragement to you, would you consider partnering with us? When you give $400 a year or $35 a month or more, you'll receive our Faithful Steward magazine, two annual devotionals or studies, including my brand new one releasing next month, Our Ultimate Treasure, plus premium access to the FaithFi app. And remember, every gift made before December 31st will be doubled thanks to a generous match. Learn more at faithfi.com/partner. That's faithfi.com/partner. We'll be right back.
If you love what you hear on this program, there's even more waiting for you at faithfi.com. Explore podcasts, videos, articles, Bible studies, and devotionals, all designed to help you see God as your ultimate treasure and money as a tool to advance His kingdom. Pursue wisdom, practice generosity, and steward God's resources in a community with others who share your faith. Visit faithfi.com to take the next step in your faith and financial journey today. That's faithfi.com.
FaithFi is grateful for support from One Ascent. One Ascent believes that your values inspire why you invest and how they can inspire how you invest. One Ascent's goal is to provide solutions designed for every need and invest in businesses that bless the people and places God has made. They want to help investors do well by doing good. To explore a new way of investing that aligns with your values, more information is available at oneascent.com and by clicking Analyze My Investments.
I'm so glad you're with us today on Faith and Finance. I so appreciate your questions, you tuning in, and you know, listen, each day we just want to encourage you, cheer you on as you live as a faithful steward of God's resources and try to provide some wise counsel, recognizing, listen, we all make mistakes. Maybe we wish we would have started saving earlier or not taken on that debt or, you know, whatever it is. But listen, you know, we put everything at the foot of the cross. We serve a God who's in the business of restoration. We hold it loosely and we just seek to be found faithful one day at a time over a lifetime. And when we do that, I believe God honors that. Now, we will not be free from any challenges. We live in a fallen world. But when we apply biblical wisdom to our financial decisions, we put ourselves in a position to experience God's best. And that's certainly what we try to help you with each day on this program. Let's head right to the phones. Omaha, Carrie, go ahead.
Yes, I was just wondering the best way to invest my money. I've got quite a bit saved and I've just had it in a just in a bank. And I want to know, you know, the best way to invest it so that it's not going to be totally inflation, you know, eaten up.
Yeah. Yeah, very good. Well, I think that last point is a key one that, you know, if we just hang on to it and it's not working for us, it is losing purchasing power because of inflation. And we can talk about why that is and why we actually shouldn't have inflation. But as a result of just an increase in the money supply over time and more money sloshing around in the system, we just kind of have gotten into this new norm that everything just gets more expensive over time. And so that's a reality. And so we need to manage money appropriately. You know, whenever we're investing, it's always important to start with a plan, not a product. So before choosing where to invest, we need to decide why we're investing And so some questions we might ask ourselves are, what are my goals? Is my goal to have a nest egg to support my lifestyle, you know, when I'm no longer working? Is it to build an emergency fund? Is it to generate income? You know, what are my goals? How long until I need the money? That's the second question, because that's your time horizon. That's critical. And then third is, what is my comfort level with risk? You know, because your goals that should be informed by your values as a Christ follower, your time horizon, and your risk tolerance really are going to allow the appropriate investment strategy to kind of fall out of those three questions, such that you're not investing, taking too much risk, or, you know, locking up the money when you need it. Or perhaps, you know, if you're saving for a specific goal and the time horizon is less than 10 years, or you don't have an emergency fund, or you have high interest debt, you shouldn't even be investing in the first place. So let's talk through that. And I'll ask a few questions that might lead us there. First, do you have what I would call an emergency fund, liquid savings?
Well, just what I'm, you know, just what I'm planning to invest. I get Social Security every month, and and I have this money, which I probably, you know, I won't invest at all because I will need emergency.
Yeah, great. And so I would say 3 to 6 months worth of expenses. Do you know what you're spending on a typical month?
Oh, I don't really. Okay. Probably. Yeah. Maybe $1,200 or something.
Okay. I mean, let's say it's $2,000. So you'd probably want somewhere between $6,000 and $12,000 that you put aside in liquid savings that would be best in what's called a high yield savings account. So this would be a bank or a credit union where you'd get a nice interest rate, somewhere north of 3%, maybe even north of 4%. A year, but it's safe. It's FDIC insured, backed by the full faith and credit of the United States government. But the key is it's liquid. You can get to it. So if something comes out of left field, then you don't have to, sell any investments. You've got money there for the unexpected. Do you have any debt at all?
No.
Okay, great. And do you have any retirement accounts of any kind or any investments? Well, you said you have not invested before, right?
No, I don't have anything like that.
Okay. And so you're just living on Social Security. So this is great. So this is a nice little nest egg. Are you able to cover your expenses on a typical month from Social Security alone?
Yes, unless I have a large expense. I got a water softener put in and I had to pay a little extra for that. But usually I can.
Got it. Yeah. And the amount that you have saved, and if you would rather not say, that's fine, but is it more than 100,000 or less?
Let me think. It's more.
Okay. Yeah. So that would put you in a category where you could have an advisor that would come alongside you to help you manage this. And that's what I would recommend. To try to pick the investments on your own when, you know, you've never invested before, you've got a sizable sum of money here and the exact amount doesn't matter. It's significant and we want to protect it, but we also want to grow it because to your point, you know, the effects of inflation. And so to build that diversified portfolio that, you know, based on your age. So let's say, I didn't ask you how old you were, but let's say you were 70, you would probably want at that point to have a 60-40 portfolio with maybe 60% in bonds, 40% in stocks. Maybe we take 10% off, 5 off of each side of those and put into precious metals like gold. But that would be a nice balanced portfolio, very conservative, generating some income that still has a growth component. If you were 60 and not 70, it might be more like a 50-50 portfolio, 50 bonds, 50 stocks. And again, we could pull 5% from either bucket and put a total of 10 in gold or precious metals. That would be a diversified portfolio. But the actual investments that are selected, which bonds and which stocks, would be the role of the advisor. And that advisor could even, if it was important to you, screen those investments for your faith values to make sure you're not owning a company that is misaligned with your values as a Christ follower. So that would be the direction that I would go, is try to interview 2 or 3 certified kingdom advisors there in Nebraska and find the one that's the best fit, and then let that advisor manage the portion of this money beyond what you're going to set aside for your emergency fund. If you're comfortable on the web, I would just go to findacka.com. CKA stands for Certified Kingdom Advisor. Findacka.com. When you get there, you can put in your zip code, and I'd interview two or three of those Certified Kingdom Advisors and find the one that's the best fit. Okay?
Okay. All right.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Well, you're welcome. Carrie, stay on the line. I'm going to send you a copy of the Sound Mind Investing Handbook. If you're a reader, this will begin to introduce you to some of the investing terms. So when you go meet with that advisor, you'll have a little bit more knowledge. And maybe some of the things will make sense a little quicker. So stay on the line. That's our gift to you. We'll get it in the mail. Hey, before we round out the broadcast today, let me remind you, this is a critical time of year for us to hear from you as a listener-supported ministry. We have a goal between now and the end of the year, and the exciting part is every gift is doubled up to $175,000. We're not there yet, but you can help us reach the goal. Just head to faithfi.com/give. Big thanks to my team today, Devin, Robert, and Taylor. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Faith and Finance is provided by FaithFi and listeners like you.